Welcome back to the spectacular show, Warp Zone.
Warp Zone.
We're back here today for day three of three, covering films by Japanese director Hayao Miyazaki and his company, Studio Ghibli. So far, we've covered Kiki's Delivery Service, and yesterday we did Spirited Away, so please go back and give those a listen if you haven't already. And next week, we will go back to our traditional Tuesday-Thursday format. But today, a blast, joining me again for the third day in a row.
Shocker.
Shocker of the century. Spectacular show regular, Samantha Jane Tilton, everybody.
Samantha Jane Tilton. Hello, everybody.
Sammy Jane, thanks for coming back.
So great being back. Love being here.
And today, our final Miyazaki film that we will be covering. My favorite of the three.
It is?
It is my favorite of the three.
So waiting to talk about this. Okay.
Princess Mononoke.
You're not going to believe this.
Okay.
My favorite.
Yes, it is yours. Okay.
It is my favorite.
Okay. It was my favorite of the three. Now, just before we get in, like the other two episodes, we're going to talk extensively about the film, plot, everything. So if you haven't watched it, you don't want anything spoiled, spoilers galore.
Galore.
Just as a big heads up. So let's dig right in. Princess Mononoke is a 1997 animated film by Hayao Miyazaki and his company, Studio Ghibli. It was released, I think it came out in the States in 1999. And basically, the plot summary is, this is right off of Google. In the 14th century, the harmony that humans, animals, and gods have enjoyed begins to crumble. The protagonist, young Ashitaka, infected by an animal attack, seeks a cure from the deer-like god Shishigami. In his travels, he sees humans ravaging the earth, bringing down the wrath of wolf god Moro and his human companion Princess Mononoke. His attempts to broker peace between her and the humans brings only conflict. That's a pretty good summary of the film, I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, there's more to it than that, but that's a pretty good overall description.
I'd say so.
Okay. So, right off the bat, obviously already we've talked about Kiki's Delivery Service. We've talked about Spirited Away, and now Princess Mononoke. Right off the bat, what are your first impressions?
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm looking up voices from this, and I'm excited.
Okay.
I'm already excited.
Yep. Why don't you go down the voices for us?
All right. So, Ashitaka is Billy Crudup. Crudup? I don't know how to pronounce his name. I don't know him well. But, is it Jigo? Is that how? Or Chigo?
I think it's Jigo in the American version. I think he's got a slightly different name in the original.
Okay.
Jigobo or something?
Okay,
Jacobo?
I think it's
But it's, I think it's Jigo in the American translation.
Okay. And Billy Bob Thornton, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, Billy Bob Thornton.
And we both knew it. As soon as he talked, I'm a huge Billy Bob fan.
Yes.
Which you know. So as soon as he opened his mouth, I was like, all in. I'm like, I'm so excited. So you said, and yeah, it was obvious it was his voice. Although a little different. Lady Abashi?
Yes.
Minnie Driver.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
And she had, I was kind of shocked. This is very clearly supposed to be, at least I think it's supposed to be, feudal Japan, right?
Yes.
I think in the 14th, it said 14th century, right? So 14th century Japan, but she's got a thick British accent, but that makes a lot of sense now.
Yeah, but it does make sense now.
Before, I'm like, man, this is really out of place. She's in full Japanese garb here.
Yeah, right. Her voice sounded so familiar the entire time. So now that's why. John DiMaggio is Gonza, which I'm not sure who that is.
Hold on, let me check. Gonza was Lady Eboshi's like right-hand guard. The one
Yeah. The one, yes. That they were like, yeah, good luck. Like, you can't defend her.
Right. That guy was not that great.
No, he was not that great.
Pretty, that's one thing. Usually, the right-hand guard is usually pretty epic.
Yeah.
This dude was kind of a schmuck.
Yeah. I wasn't digging in with him.
Yeah.
So other than that, so the ones that stick out to me, I'll just say the people that I know. So Sans voice, Claire Danes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I did not realize that. Also, aka Princess Mononoke.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yes. And Toki, who, if you remember, was the woman that was kind of bashing her husband the whole time. She's like, I don't know why I'm married to this guy.
She had like a Brooklyn almost accent.
Do you know why? Do you know who she is?
Rosie Perez or something?
Jada Pinkett Smith.
Oh, no kidding. All right.
Yes,
perfect.
It makes total sense now.
She didn't sound like Rosie Perez, but I'm just like, she's got like an attitude almost.
Yeah, she definitely had some swagger in her voice.
Yeah, like she came from the city.
Yeah, she was like, no, that ain't happening. And we were like, all right, she's got some swag.
That makes sense, yeah.
Jada Pinkett Smith. And then Keith David is Okoto. Who was Okoto in that?
Okoto, I believe, is the giant kind of lord of the boars.
Yes. Other than that, it's just additional voice. Not just. I mean, everybody does a phenomenal job. But those are the ones that were a surprise to me and that I was wondering the whole time I was watching it.
Right.
So very cool to know now who I was listening to.
Yes. And Billy Crudup, I just want to see.
That's a name that I know, but I can't place it.
Yeah, he's been in a bunch of movies. Sleepers. Almost Famous, Big Fish, Mission Impossible 3, Watchmen. I mean, he's had a lot of.
He's certainly a
parts.
Working actor. Yes.
Alien Covenant. You know, it goes on and on. He's got a big long career here.
Yeah, he was great. I mean, his voice was perfect.
Yes, he really was.
Yeah.
Okay, so the movie itself.
Yes.
Now, of the three movies we watched, this was my favorite. Why was it your favorite?
See, I was gonna go. Why was it your favorite?
Okay.
I loved the simplicity and importance of what the message was.
Yes.
And I feel like it's similar in his other movies that I've seen, or the other two. But this one, it deeply affected me. How, and when I say that, it has to do with evil prevailing and what can happen when you let fear and anger fester within yourself and what it does to others and the impact it has on the world around us. And the way that humans have just taken it upon themselves to claim this world as their own, to do with what they will. And there is so much more to it. I love in these movies, especially this one, and in their culture, how much honor and respect they have for the spiritual realm and the earth and the nature. And so that, to me, that the dynamic between those two things, and we'll get into that more, but it was really profound.
Yes.
Why is it your favorite?
Well, it's my favorite for a few reasons. First of all, of the three that we watched, I feel like this movie is kind of the most, one, it's got the most action.
Mm-hmm.
Two, it's the most, of the three, it's the most true to life, as silly as that might sound in a in an anime where there's, you know, spirit gods and all these other things. This movie, unlike the other two, Kiki's delivery service is wonderful, but of the three, it's the most lighthearted.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's kind of fun. It's kind of a kid's movie.
Definitely.
Spirited Away is maybe the most artistic of the three, and it's not simply a kid's movie.
Right.
Not that Kiki's definitely is, but it is more of a kid's movie than Spirited Away.
Yes.
And Spirited Away is maybe more of a philosophical film than Kiki's delivery service.
There's definitely a lot of layers going on there.
A lot more layers than Kiki's.
Yeah.
This film, of the three, is one, the most different.
Absolutely.
And it's got this almost Lord of the Rings type, almost like a folklore. There's a mythology to it. There are these giant battles. I remember, because I had only seen a few of them before this, and none of them involved fighting or violence. And I know he does have other films. There's one, I forget the name of it. It's something to do with fireflies, Jar of Fireflies or something. That's like a war movie.
Mm. Also animated?
Also animated.
Wow.
This movie is about samurai and industrialization, and you see people get killed. You see people's arms get chopped off. You see people's heads get shot off. You see violence and swords and arrows and all that kind of stuff.
Graphically. Yes.
I mean, it's animated, but it's graphic.
That's one of the things that I noted. I was like, wow, that, like, straight up arms just flying about, heads just, going midair, just straight off their bodies.
Yes, and I also love this movie for the same reason that you do. I love how the message of the whole movie, or not the only message, but one of the messages of the whole movie, is about human greed and consumption and industrialization destroying the earth. Mm-hmm. It's a simple message. And what I love is that in the film, the people that want to expand, like Lydia Boshi, right?
Mm-hmm.
everybody in the Ironworks, the village that Ashika ends up at. And first of all, that was one thing I wanted to say. I watched the Japanese dubs with the subtitles.
Yeah.
Then I watched this one with you today.
Yes.
The Japanese version is, I think, much better. Mm. It's kind of funny because it's like Spirited Away or Kiki's, where the subtleties are not humongous, but I just think they make it better the way they are in the original.
Got it. Yeah.
One thing we said about Jigo was Billy Bob Thornton's voice. The guy's an amazing actor. Mm-hmm. I'm not taking a thing from him.
Yeah.
But similarly to Phil Hartman as Gigi in Kiki's Delivery Service, the movie's animated to Japanese. So they have to fill the lines at a cadence that is not normal. Yes. They have to write lines to fit the animation, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
So the delivery sometimes is just different. Not necessarily 1,000% natural.
Yeah.
It has to be mechanical, but it becomes this thing where he has to hit marks instead of just acting the line naturally.
Yeah.
Just like Phil Hartman had to.
Yeah.
And Billy Bob has a great voice, but I liked the original version of Jigo better. I think he's Jacobo in the original. Mm. But he's, it's Billy Bob Thornton. You know what he sounds like. But in the original, the actor kind of sounds sleazier. He kind of sounds... He's kind of creepier, a little...
The cadence of his voice is completely different.
Yeah.
You showed me. I mean, you did... You had me, listen to that, just that character's voice. And it was very different. It makes for a totally different character.
Yes, yes.
So it's tough. That's tough.
But he is a great character nonetheless.
Yeah.
But also, in Japanese, a lot of the syllables are, the pronunciation of them is shortened. So like, everyone in this movie calls him Ashitaka, right?
Yeah.
Prince Ashitaka. But in Japanese, you'd say that more fluidly. Ashitaka.
Oh,
that's how they pronounce
really?
It in the original.
Huh.
Ashitaka, like something
got it.
More along those lines. So it's almost three syllables instead of four.
Huh. With Billy Bob's voice, it's interesting because it didn't bother me at all.
It didn't bother me.
No, but like Phil Hartman's, that one for Gigi in Kiki's Delivery, that one, it was clearly, it just didn't fit for me. This, I didn't feel that with Billy Bob, but I will say, you just said that in the original, his voice, the character's voice was like sleazier. And this is one of my comments on the film. While it was my favorite, I found it a little confusing because there was so many different things going on with these people versus that people, but these people also involved with that people. And there was good and bad in a lot of the people and a lot of the animals. And they had different reasons for doing or not doing what they were doing. So there was not a clear bad guy or good guy, but Billy Bob's character, it's interesting because I didn't know whether he was a bad guy or a good guy. And the fact that he was working with, how do you pronounce her name?
Eboshi.
The fact that then I was like, oh, so he's just doing what, and so I wasn't sure if I liked her either.
Yeah.
So, it was interesting because these people are taking from the earth and tailoring the earth by trying to kill certain groups of animals to make it so it suits their needs.
Right.
Which made me hate them.
Right.
But it also, it's like they were doing what they thought was they had to do.
Right.
And I it didn't have to be that way. But Billy Bob's voice, I was like, it was more of a good guy voice.
Yeah.
It wasn't as sleazy. It had it been a little creepier, a little like more Jafar-like, like we spoke about him the other day, I'd have more of a clear sense that he is not in the right.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
And that's what I kind of like about that's what I like about the story is that all of the characters, they all, whether they're an animal, and we find out in the movie that some of the animals are gods, whether they're human, they all are doing, like you said, they're not necessarily doing something evil. They think they're doing what they think they should do. Lady Eboshi, the whole Ironworks, everybody in that village loves her because she gave them security, she gave them jobs, she provided guns to protect themselves from the animals.
She's the only person she took in lepers?
That's the thing. She took in lepers, and the lepers say, she took us in, she treated us like human beings, everybody else rejects us.
Yep.
She washed our rotting flesh. That's what they said.
Yep.
And as a result, they're all completely devoted to her, and they're the ones that make her weapons.
Yes, exactly.
So she's not horribly evil, and granted, maybe she is just doing it just for her own selfish means, but it doesn't seem that way.
Right.
She also said that she wants to continue the expansion because she runs the ironworks where they all live. And, you know, you find out through the story that initially there was a mine or the land was all mined of all the iron. But then in order to get more, they had to cut all the woods down and take the iron and draw it out of the sand that was left over. And as a result, all of the animals were displaced and now they hate the humans for it.
Right. And that's what it made me very sad, because I hate humans for that.
Yeah.
When I hear about animals that are now extinct or there are only this many left, and it's because of how we've built up our planet, and you know, it breaks my heart, and it makes me hate humans and what we've done.
Right.
And
it's an ugly truth, but
it is. That's something that was a big thing. It was a little, while this was my favorite movie, it was hard to watch being such an animal lover.
Yeah.
Every single thing that these animals were feeling and that was being taken from them, and that they had to defend, and that they even the boars, mm-hmm, couldn't defend. They could not defend themselves, and there was not enough that they could do. And it broke my heart. It broke my heart.
And the whole beginning of the movie is, you know, Ashtika's village being basically terrorized by a demon. And I don't know how to explain what the demon looks like. It looks like a purple or brown spaghetti monster, basically. It's all of these, like, living, wriggling, almost worms, and it's amorphous. It can kind of grow legs like a spider. It can change shape, and it's got these two red eyes, and it comes running along very fast. It's agile, and Ashtika rides, like, this big... I thought the elk was awesome.
Oh, my God. The elk may have been my favorite character.
The elk's name was Yaku, but Ashtika basically uses his arrow to fend off the... You see right away he's a skilled archer.
Yep.
He's a skilled rider.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a warrior. And he defends the village from this creature, and he ends up killing it. And he's like their new young leader. He's supposed to lead the mm-hmm, quote-unquote the clan or the tribe or whatever it may be when he comes of age. And he's basically there already, but he's going to grow into this leader.
Right.
And of course, when he first sees the demon coming, he's up in a tower with an archer, and the guy says, Don't touch it. You know, you'll
don't
be
let it
cursed.
Touch it. Yes, exactly. Whatever you do, don't let it touch you.
Yes. And of course, it grabs him on the arm and he is cursed.
Yeah.
So he has to. One thing we both talked about was in the Japanese version, it's a little less descriptive than the English version. In the English version, it's much more specific. They're basically, and I'm paraphrasing or making it up here, but it's basically like, you have to leave. You can never come back. You can blah, blah, blah. In the Japanese version, it's a lot more simple. Now you can never come back. You are dead to us.
Got it.
By the law or whatever
right,
it is.
Right,
it's
right.
A lot more simple. It's a lot more, this is the way of our people.
Yes. Okay.
You know?
Right.
There's a lot more explaining going on in the English version.
Which is why I said to you, I'm like, wait, but if he gets cured, like, then he can come back. Like, because there was a lot being said about it. So I was trying to piece it together. Whereas in the Japanese version, if I would have seen that, it probably would have made a lot more sense.
Right. Exactly. And he cuts off his top knot or his queue or whatever it might be called. And that's supposed to, I remember thinking it had something to do with samurai. So I looked it up. And this is from Google. I don't know specifically which website I clicked on, but cutting off one's hair is a common motif found throughout Japanese dramas, especially anime. It's an unmistakable symbol of deciding to change one's life in some way, but the historical value is often lost on Western audiences. So today it's often associated with girls, but as shown through Ashtika's removal of his top knot, the practice can be performed by men and women. In fact, cutting off one's top knot is a ritual specifically tied to samurai. Mm. Samurai who during the Edo period represented the highest level of society were typically denoted by having top knots. If a samurai decided to cut it off, mm-hmm, ultimately he was deciding to give up his social standing, and he could decide to maybe go become a peasant or join the clergy or priesthood or whatever.
No longer a samurai.
Right. So when Ashtika does that, he's abandoning his social status as the clan leader.
Wow. Yeah, that would be lost because it's on Western culture. And it's so significant.
Yes, it's a big, big deal.
Life as he know, and that moment, life as he's known it is over.
Yes, he's dead to all of his people that he's lived with his whole life. One thing that confused me, and in this version, it was, I think, more clear. I did not understand this in the Japanese, or in the original version, I should say. When he goes to leave and he's wearing like that, you called it like your Superman cloak.
Yeah.
He's wearing very cool riding gear. He looked to me like, there are two video game characters he reminded me of. The lead character in the video game Journey, mm-hmm. which is, you don't ever learn the name of that character. It's just, you just start playing and you're this character. And then there's also a game called Hyper Light Drifter, but it's like this kind of cloak with a mask and like a headdress type of a thing. Mm-hmm. As he's leaving in the middle of the night, a girl runs up to him and gives him this crystal dagger.
Yeah.
And he says, you can be, you know, exiled for this. But, and she said, I don't care. You need to take this with you to remember me forever.
Yeah.
And he says, sister, what are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. And it's his sister that gives it to him. Mm-hmm. Maybe I missed it, but I don't remember that from the original. I thought it was like a girl he loved. Because she says, like, you'll be in my heart forever, and you'll be in mine, and he takes off. And I remember just thinking, like, oh, that's his sister? I didn't pick that up when I watched the original. I thought it was a romantic thing.
That would be very, very different. You know, and he said, I can never forget you, sister.
Yes,
like,
yes.
I'll never forget you. And, wow, that would be a totally different thing if it were romantic.
Yeah, totally different.
Huh.
But he goes off and he begins his journey, and you get to see right away this guy's kind of he's a good guy.
Yeah.
He, as he's going through the woods, he's cursed now. So this scar on his arm, it's like this big purple, dark scar. Mm-hmm. It's reacting to him, and he's like washing it under cold water, and they tell him it's going to spread and it's going to kill you.
Yeah.
That's what your fate is.
Yep.
Inevitable. But as he's kind of moving across the countryside on his elk, he sees this massacre in this village taking place, and he starts riding in to disrupt it and he starts shooting at people mm-hmm. to break it up, to save people. And they end up chasing him down and they start shooting at him. But one thing I wanted to say, all of Miyazaki's films, all the animation that I've ever seen in his films are all amazing. In this film, there are several times, two or three times, I think, maybe four, where from far away, a character, an archer, shoots an arrow directly at you.
Mm-hmm.
And the effect of it is so real. It feels like the arrow is going to hit you mm-hmm. when you're watching
yep.
it. And I love it. I think it's absolutely awesome. He, after the massacre, finds these two guys that he saves.
Yep. I was going to say, there was one part of it where, so he has this curse now on him and it's going to kill him. And it's kind of a curse of hatred. Like, it's going to grow inside him, the anger and the hatred. But then at one point, it serves to do good. Do you remember the part that I'm talking about?
I do. Why don't you explain it?
Well, I'm kind of asking and saying it at the same time. Like, it was powerful. And I don't know if it was the power of that, of the curse combined with himself, that he was able to use that as like a blocking of what evil was coming at him, or I'm not really sure.
I see.
Do you?
I don't know specifically. So in the scene you're describing,
basically
it's established that Lady Eboshi is the leader of this mm-hmm. group of people, this village, whatever it may be. And we do get a glimpse earlier of the wolves. There are three wolves.
Yes.
Two, you know, they're like full-grown wolves, but they're white.
Mm-hmm.
And Princess Mononoke is like this human that wears a mask that rides them. And then you also see there is one other giant white wolf that's the mother of the three of them. And they're attacking the caravan of iron workers.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's later in the film, and now they're attacking the ironworks, the actual village.
Yeah.
Because Princess Mononoke wants to kill Eboshi.
Yes, yes.
In the meanwhile, Ashitaka has shown up, saved two men, and mm-hmm. he's been kind of welcomed into the village.
Yes.
And now Mononoke crashes into during the night, the village, and now she's running around because she wants to kill Eboshi. And now they're fighting in the center of the village, and the villagers have them surrounded. So they're in the middle of this ring of people, and they're both fighting to the death. When Ashitaka kind of breaks it up, using this power from this curse, whatever it may be, it becomes this...
like a shield.
Kind of. It just gives him super strength. The right-hand guard, the schmucko dude.
Yeah, schmucko.
He's holding him. He's trying to hold him off. Like, you traitor, you are with her. You're a spy for the wolves.
Yeah.
And he just grabs his katana, this giant... I might be using the wrong word for the sword. It's a giant long sword he uses two hands for. And he just grabs the tip of the blade and just bends it like a pool noodle.
That was so awesome.
Yeah.
Yes.
and he just walks right by him.
It's like he put it. It's like the spell on him put a spell on the sword, and it just like it melted down.
Yeah, it just curled over like a curl of hair.
Yep, it was exactly. Awesome.
And then of course Ashitaka goes out there and uses the power to one. He uses his powerful hand to hold Princess Mononoke, and she can't get away from his grip. And then he uses his human arm, quote-unquote, with the sword to hold off Eboshi.
Yes.
And he's holding them both off, arguing about, don't you see, this is hatred. This is spite. This is what this will do to you.
Yep.
And the power, what's funny is Princess Mononoke is terrified because the power, the cursed arm, which he's giving him this power.
Yeah.
Like I said earlier, the first demon had like, I don't know what they were, kind of wormy looking things, wriggling very fast all over it.
And when they were off of him, we saw that it was a boar.
It was a boar,
but it was covered in these like wormy, like you said, like brown spaghetti, this like spaghetti monster, but it's an actual animal. But the curse is these like veiny things all over it
that have turned him into a demon. Yes. They keep calling him a demon.
Yep.
And it turns out he was made that way because he was shot by Lady Eboshi and he had a piece of iron. He had an iron pellet in him that corrupted him and turned him into a demon. And now he bears this curse because he tried to stop it. And now he's using this curse to keep them from killing each other while he also explains what is happening.
Right.
Yeah.
So to me, it's not totally explained, but I find it really interesting. The whole thing, I mean, I guess it kind of does make sense in and of itself, the way this movie is. There, depending on what you're trying to do or what people's intentions are, they are both good and evil in their intentions, and they play out differently throughout the movie.
Yes.
And so I guess it's kind of the same thing. Like, he's cursed with this thing, but I don't know. It served in that way for whatever reason at that moment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the demons were powerful, right?
Yeah.
They, you know, you see a couple of them in the movie. Yeah. And they're both, whenever they become a demon, they are powerful. They're.
Yeah, there's like no, look, I mean.
They're very formidable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They have to go way out of their way to stop them, right? But he uses his power to save Mononoke and leave the village with her.
Yeah, so then he opens the gate, which now his arm is bleeding, I believe, at that point. He's bleeding because he was hurt protecting Princess Mononoke.
Well, yes. Well, what happened was she cut him when she woke up. Yeah. He tried to save her, and she cut him in the face.
Yes.
And then, even though he went and broke up the fight, and he knocked out Eboshi, let her go, had the villagers help her, and then he picks up Mononoke to leave, and one of the ladies, even though she initially means to do it, she doesn't. She gets startled and accidentally shoots him.
That's right, she shot him.
And he's not affected. But they're all trying to stop him from leaving, and he just uses his demon arm to, like, open the gate. They're like, it takes 10 men to open that. And he just pushes it, and he's bleeding and bleeding, and they're like, stop, you'll die, and he just still
and they were all just like, so it's, I love how they, the worlds are crossed over between the all-powerful, the unknowing nature of this world and the humanity of it. And I love that. That's one of the things that I was thinking the whole time is I love how strong their belief and their respect is for the things that are or are possibly greater than us.
Yeah.
Or the unexplained. And they have such a profound respect. There was one point, even talking to the beast at one point throughout the film, that he said, maybe he even said, with all respect, like he was being so respectful to this evil demon, the way that he spoke to him. And please, demon, please, you know, and just
with the demon that raided his village.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And spoke to this demon with the utmost respect. And while you would see normally the quote unquote demon or bad guy, you'd probably just try and kill it. And, you know, that would be the end of that. There was profound respect for this thing that is other than humanity.
Well, even when it died, the elder lady, she came out and she bowed and she said, we will give you a proper burial and we will hope you'll move on or rest in peace or whatever it might have been. And then, of course, the demon starts, like, rotting in front of them.
Yes.
And it's like, I hope you all suffer just like I have, you know. And it literally, the eyeball, like, rots straight into its skull.
And that's, and there's something so profound about, I truly believe this. We talk about cancer and all these diseases and heart attacks. People get sick and die from the stuff that they have inside themselves that they push down, that fester, resentment, anger, fear, and they eat away. I truly believe that they eat away at us from the inside out, and we get sick. And that's this culture. They talk about it. Me saying that could sound weird, right, in our culture, because it's kind of like, okay, you know, like, it has nothing to do with that. But in their culture, they have such a profound respect for the experience and what emotions and things greater than our understanding, the effect they have on us.
Yeah.
That look at the anger that rotted that beast and caused him to die.
Yes.
Or her. I think it was him.
And it sent him, it was anger and hatred of the humans.
Of the humans.
That turned him into that creature.
And that's I guess this film was a little hard for me to watch because it's so true and so real that in this world there is so much hatred and fear and acting out against people different than oneself because there's such a lack of understanding. And so people are just scared of what they don't know or what's different than them, so they have to, I believe, people have to cling to these ideas that they've formed so that way they feel safe and like they know something. And it leads to this distrust and this anger and this resentment and this hurting others and having and forcing things to be in a way that is comfortable for them, that they can understand, no matter what the consequence to the others or this planet around them.
And that's what I was going to say, is that in this movie, it's the disregard. It's the, you know, Lady Eboshi's like, we've got to expand. We got to cut down all these woods. Mm-hmm. And then we'll have a rich society. We'll right. have a booming community, yeah. you know? And the monk, Jigo.
Yeah.
A few times in the movie, he's like, people lie to each other. People hurt each other. That's the way it is.
Yeah.
And he just accepts like, you don't have to be nice. Exactly. You just have to accept that people fuck each other.
Yeah. Eh. Yeah.
And he, you know, it's like he works for the government and the emperor wants to be immortal. So his idea is like, if you bring me the deer god's head, they call it the forest spirit in the English version.
Yeah.
In the Japanese version, they kept calling it the deer god. Hmm. And if you bring me the deer god's head, which is basically the spirit of the forest, it's mm-hmm. a god that lives in the forest. Yeah. And it looks like a different version of a deer.
Yeah.
If you bring me that thing's head, I might live forever. So I'll pay you. So that's, you know.
Yeah.
That's the deal they had worked out. Jigo was working for the emperor. He wanted the deer god's head. He was offering protection from, I forget, from another clan for Lady Eboshi mm-hmm. if she helped him get the deer god's head. So it's just like, well, I want to expand, so I'll go with this corrupt guy who wants to kill a god in the forest. Fuck the forest. And we'll just take whatever we want just because we want it.
Right.
Forget about whoever lives there. And, you know, all of the animals are represented in the film by tribes or groups. Yes.
Like the gorillas.
Yes, the apes, they all talk. The men have destroyed the forest. And Lady Eboshi, at one point, she shoots a gun into the night and breaks up this little cluster on a hill of apes that, like, you couldn't even see.
Yeah.
And she said every night they go out there and they try to plant trees to regrow the forest. It's and like...
Right.
And she won't let them because she wants to knock it all down.
Right.
And then, you know, the boars, they're all mad at the wolves and the humans because of what happened to, I think it was Nago... The boar in the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
They all resent the wolves because the wolves are, they think they're, I don't know if they think they were aligned with the humans or whatever it might have been, but, you know, they resent everybody. Every group resents the other group, and there's no understanding. There's just resentment and disregard for what anybody else needs.
And it's, and people are driven by their own idea of what is going to be the best thing for their people, their tribe, their land, the world. And it was deeply upsetting because look at our world today. Like, and look at people that hunt elephants for their tusks for money purposes. I mean, to rob the world of the beauty that is naturally here for their own selfish gains. And that's all that they see is like, no, this is a moneymaker. And it makes me so angry and it makes me so sad.
Right.
And I felt that this whole movie, that's why it was so truthful and on so many levels.
Yes.
And yeah, so I did it. So Eboshi?
Lady Eboshi.
Yeah, Lady Eboshi. I was mixed about her the entire time.
Right. She was kind, but also ruthless in her own way. And one of the things that I thought was kind of poetic in the movie was when she shoots Princess Mononoke when she's raiding the village, and she shoots her, and she said, cut off a wolf's head, and it still has the power to bite. And of course, at the end of the movie, one of the wolf gods, the wolf god in the movie, has passed away, but it's a whole sequence during the, you know, they're near the spirit god, they're near the deer god, and the wolf, even though its head is off, comes wiggling across like a monster and just bites her whole arm off.
Yep.
And then she says, you know, something like, I told you.
Yep. You know what you just reminded me of as well? You know, coming, like, thinking about how people can have the best of intentions. Like, two different people can have the best of intentions, and they can be polar opposite ideas. So now, San is her mother, Wolf, is talking about, because she's going to be dying at some point soon. And she talks about bringing San with her to die, right? Or not to save her. And Ashitaka says, like, no, let her live. Let her stay. Let her live. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. I think so. Yeah.
I wasn't sure why San's mom was going to die.
At which point is this? Because she does get shot at one point.
No, it's before she's shot. But she talks about that she's not going to be living much longer.
I think it's just because she's old.
Okay.
Or she's been around a long time. I've lived long enough, I think she says at one point.
Okay. And then, but she talks about San, and she talks about, I'm not saying she says she's going to kill her, but she definitely does not want to leave her with the humans.
Right.
And she's not going to be okay by herself. So there's like, Ashitaka like says, please let her stay, let her live, let her, you know, she can, but the mother doesn't want her to be a human.
Right.
Because she wasn't, but she said, you know, because of humans, she's not a wolf and she's not a human.
Right.
Because humans left her.
Yeah.
Alone. And so she was now raised by a wolf, who is her mother, Wolf, who is talking, but she's not a human. So she can't be with humans and she can't be with wolves.
Yeah, she says, and that's partly why she resents the humans, as she said, I forget how she says it, but basically they were scared and they threw her at my feet. They left her to die.
Exactly. So she has this resentment, which with resentment, she's not able to see clearly about her daughter who's young and still has a whole life ahead of her because she's just so angry at the world the way it is.
Yes.
That how could she possibly see what would be good for San? And Ashitaka, once at one point later on, she says, the mother says, he wants to spend his life with you.
Yes.
And that to me sounds a lot better than dying. He has this guy that loves her, cares about her. They have a connection. That's, can I just to say one more thing? Again, I spoke about this with the last film.
Spirited Away.
Yes, Spirited Away. The way that love is portrayed.
Yes.
And that it's not romantic love. And I love that. I saw that in this movie. There was so much love. Mm-hmm. And it was between humans and animals, between humans and nature, between a spirit and the earth. And like, there was moments between Ashitaka and San that there was so much love and connection. And it wasn't necessarily romantic.
No.
It was just, they had each other.
Yes.
And I just love that, because in a lot of movies, animated Disney movies, which are also wonderful, but it's like a romantic love, you know, there's a princess and a prince. And I just love that love is not just the one way to look at it in these movies.
Right.
The way that he portrays that.
It's never, that's one thing about typical, I'm talking about kind of bubblegum American cinema, is, hey, somebody's got to get laid, but it's going to be not till the end. Maybe I won't get laid. No, I'm going to get laid. It's a happy ending. I'm getting laid.
Because
that's
right.
Just make sure someone gets laid in the film.
Exactly.
That's it. But not till the end.
Not till
the end.
Make
them work for it.
Yeah, make them work for it.
Yeah, but everybody needs sex. And that was one thing that was kind of funny in the movie, was that when Ashitaka goes to the village, every woman in the village wants to jump this kid's bones.
They're like, let me see your face. I want to see if you're as handsome as I think. And then they're like, you're gorgeous.
Yeah.
She says that.
And they're all in robes.
You seeing boobs on them?
The cleavage hanging out.
I know.
Come on over here anytime.
I know.
He's a little young for me. Oh, that never stopped me. They were all just a bunch of horny ladies in that village.
You know what I loved? I loved that the women in that village were so strong. Like, they would say to the men, they're like, yeah, if it wasn't for this, you would have, you know, you couldn't do it without us. We do the hard work, pretty much.
Yeah, the men basically were complaining, like, hey, we lost a lot of great men today. You know, I forget if they said they used swords or whatever. And they're like, yeah, but where the hell do you think you got that iron? From us. Yeah. We're the ones working out there getting it.
Exactly.
Yeah. I love that they didn't take any shit from the guys.
I know.
Yeah.
In fact, they dished it. They dished it to them. Like, I guess it's Toki or Jada Pinkett Smith.
Yeah.
She's just giving her hubby crap the entire time. She's like, he's like sleeping. She's like, yeah, I don't know why I went this one. If he didn't, blah, blah, blah.
Well, when he's one of the guys that Ashtika saves, right? He saves him. He's been injured in a battle, and he brings him and another guy back to the village initially. And she comes running down. Oh, you're alive. You're alive. But immediately, and in this version, she yells at him. In the Japanese version, it's a little more clear. She's like, you idiot. How are you going to work with a broken leg? She's like mad at him.
Ha.
She's like, you idiot.
Yeah.
And then she says some stuff like, I got to get a real man or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
She says that in the English version too.
Yeah, she does.
She was a little bit more... it was a little bit more direct in the Japanese version, in the original, I should say. I keep saying Japanese version when I should just say original.
Yeah.
And I mean to say that, but I keep forgetting.
We keep going back from Japanese to English, so it's understandable. It's not like you're disregarding that's the original.
Right. Now, one thing in the film that I wanted to talk about, well, a couple of things. One are the tree spirits, which... I know you put their name down, right? What was their name again?
So the little tree spirits were Kodama.
Kodama, that's right.
Kodama.
Yeah.
I actually wrote little Caspers, Kodama.
Yes. And they basically look like little... picture every alien movie you've ever seen.
Yep.
They look like that. They're just these little white glowing creatures with dark eyes. Sometimes... It's like two eyes and a mouth or something. Like.
But they can kind of change places.
Yeah, they all have different, slightly different features.
Yeah.
And they're just supposed to be these spirits that live in the forest, live in the trees. They remind me very much of, I hate to go back to video games again, but the Koroks from Legend of Zelda. And I think that's where they got those from, is from the idea of Kodama, like, you know, tree spirits.
That would make sense.
And they make very similar sounds, kind of that... clacky little bobblehead thing they do.
And their heads actually, they do like turn. So like their heads turn a little bit. And they're, so it's not like they have two eyes that are...
symmetrical.
Yeah, they're not symmetrical. They're not the same size. And their mouth, they have like these three different shapes on their face placed as eyes and mouth, but they're all different shapes.
Right.
Which makes them look really, they're just adorable.
They're very cute. And especially the one that's like, he's like, can you lead us through the forest? And there's one dude just running naked, just hustling like a little baby, just like little white cheeks hustling through the brush. So
he's
funny.
Tiny little tree spirit tushies.
Yeah.
Oh, I was like, his tushy. So cute.
It was
funny. They were so cute.
We're such children.
We're such.
Look, a butt. And it was a cute little butt. What can I say?
It was a cute little butt.
An adorable little animated ass.
Little animated ass.
But the guy that he saves, he's at one point, he's like, no, he freaks out when he sees it because he's like, that thing's going to bring the deer god.
Yes.
He's going to, and then more of them start showing up and he starts freaking out because the more of them that show up, the idea is they'll summon the deer god or their presence will.
Who's freaking out?
The guy with the busted leg that Ashtaka saves. The guy.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Got it. Yep. One of the guys.
So they go through the woods. And of course, there's that scene where, separately from this, there's the scene in the woods where after Ashtika's been shot and he saves Mononoke, she's riding back with the wolves and Ashtika falls and he's going to die. So she brings him to the woods and lays him in the middle of the lake on the island with the, she like marks him with a plant.
Yes.
And all of the tree spirits, the Kodamas,
I think.
The Kodamas show up and they all start, clack in there. It's almost like how an old rotary phone, you'd push it to the end and it would spin back. Yep. Instead of spinning back slowly, it would like rattle back in place.
Yes. That's a really good call.
So that kind of a thing.
Yes.
So they all start clicking and clacking, and now it's this whole chorus of them. There's hundreds and hundreds of them in the trees. And the deer god comes walking, and it's this giant, so it's like a celestial. Its body looks like outer space, like galaxy, yep. like
it
stars.
It was beautiful. It just, the way it transformed, oh, it was, you could just see like the whole galaxy within its being.
Yeah.
It was so beautiful the way that they animated that.
And it finds the kind of cove where he is, the little cropping of the trees, and it shrinks down back to, we had seen it once, kind of silhouetted, not silhouetted might be the wrong word, but with light behind it.
Yes.
So you could see the outline of it as a deer. Creature.
Was it the because there's a part that was animated where it's through the trees and
yes,
the sunlight
with all the antlers.
Yes.
It has like a very odd shaped but like multiple antlers.
Yeah. And that's one of my favorite shots, by the way. I thought that was animated so beautiful. I went like, oh, it was so beautiful.
Yes.
And when you see the deer god. So
the
it's different.
God.
Yeah, the deer god. When you see it through just in that sunlight. Oh,
it was amazing.
It was just basking.
As it walked away, the sunlight disappeared, which yes. I thought was cool. Oh. Like it was bringing that light. But here it is. It shrinks down from the Nightwalker, which they call it at night, and it shrinks down back to the deer god. And what I love is the animation shows it walking, the animation is on its feet. And every step it takes, every time its foot hits the ground, a burst of vegetation, like quickly, within the span of like 3 seconds, bursts into life, grows out of the ground, and then wilts and dies. And I love it because they, throughout the movie, they call the tree god, the deer god, I should say, a god of life and death.
I was just going there.
Which is, I love that because that's nature. Everything lives, everything dies, and everything goes through this cycle. So I love the I don't know if poetry is the right word, but the representation of life and death, just that's what it brings everywhere it goes. And throughout the film, it chooses who lives and who dies. And
it's exactly where my head was at. Yep.
Yeah. And it, you know, Ashtika, it kind of hovers over him and it chooses that he should live and keeps him alive. I love it. I mean, this to me, I don't want to say it drives home the whole movie, but I think this thing is, sorry for cursing, it is rad as fuck.
Yeah.
I love it. I fucking love it.
It's astounding.
Yeah.
It like, I don't even have a word for it. It is, it's bananas. And like, you touched on where I was going, which I didn't know if you were going to go there. But they say throughout this movie that the deer god has the power to give life and to take away life.
Right.
And like you just said that, and nobody has a say except for the deer god. Like they said about their friend who was the first boar we saw.
Yes.
Who
I think it's Nago.
Yeah. I'm not sure, but who turned demon.
Yes.
And they say...
The boars do say.
Yeah, the boars say, you know, he didn't save him. And like, how could he not save him?
He saved this human. Why did he not save Nago?
Exactly. Yeah. And so, which is so beautiful because they couldn't answer that in the movie.
Right.
We can't answer it.
Nope.
And that is life.
Right.
Why do some people die young that are amazing and have a full life ahead of them? And why do some people live to 105 that are bitter and miserable and hurt everyone around them?
Right.
There is no rhyme or reason. And we don't know it. We don't understand it. And we have no goddamn say.
Right.
And this movie showed that with no explanation so beautifully, because that's exactly what it is. There is no explanation.
Yes.
And it was so beautiful.
So... Basically, by the end of the film, Jigo and Eboshi are going to kill the deer god. That's what they want, because if they can secure the deer god's head, the idea is that the emperor will favor them, and if he can get this animal's head, he will live forever. That's what the emperor wants. The emperor, who you don't ever even see.
Yeah.
He's this character that doesn't show up.
Yeah.
But Eboshi and her men and Jigo's men, they wait until the big battle has happened between the boars and the men and the wolves. And they wait until the old elder boar, I forget his name, has become infected and he's a demon and he's swallowing Mononoke and she's becoming a demon with him.
Yeah.
And Ashtika tries to fight her out, but the wolves help he gets thrown into the water and he's passed out, and the wolves help save her. And while this is happening, the deer god, because everyone is, you know, dying, and the deer god is coming to either bestow or take away life, right? And as it's coming toward them, Ashtaka wakes up. You know, I think the wolf god wakes him while he's underwater. Mm. Please help her, or whatever says. And he wakes up and he sees the deer god coming right toward them. And what I love is that it walks on water. It walks on water. It's walking toward them where the boar and the wolf have both fallen. And as it's doing this, Eboshi shoots it in the head. And you see the bullet pass through its head. And its eyes, if I'm not mistaken, they change color. It starts sagging. And Ashtaka's like, no! And then it just starts, its front paws start sinking into the water. And then it just kind of walks it off, raises back up, starts walking again. And then it goes and it's merciful. It grants death to the boar who had become a demon.
They were like, why did it take away life?
Yeah, it was merciful. It gave him death. Yep. And then it gave death to the wolf god, who also had been shot and had a similarly to the boar, had an iron pellet in her.
Mm. Yeah.
And it grants them both death. And then it starts, the nightfall hits, and it starts growing into the Nightwalker again. Yep. And it's growing into this giant, tall creature again. Mm-hmm. And while that's happening, Eboshi goes to shoot it again, but Ashtaka throws the sword. He jams up the gun. Then the deer god looks right at her, and he just starts growing plants on her gun.
Yep.
And she still brushes him off and shoots him, and it knocks its head off. And they grab the head, and they start running. And in the meanwhile, the deer god starts turning into this dark ooze, this poisonous thing. And basically the rest of the film is the deer god, everybody running for their lives, Ashtaka and Mononoke trying to get the deer god's head back, because they take the deer god's head and they run away to take it to the emperor.
Yep.
And the rest of the film is the deer god oozing everywhere, trying to get its head back, chasing everybody, surrounding everybody, and they're all running back toward the village. And obviously it follows them, so all the ooze, the blob, whatever it is, it all heads back toward the village, and everybody's running for their lives, scared of this dark matter, all while they're trying to get the head back. And I love it, because the idea is, to me, it says, you know, you have nature, you have the forest, you have this spirit. Mm-hmm. If you kill it, you're doomed. Which is true. Right. If you destroy the planet, there's nowhere for you to be. You're going to die. If you kill the planet, it's going to kill you in turn.
Yep. And that, that's exactly it. We talk about this all the time, but you know, when people pollute and litter and all that stuff, it's like, they think it doesn't affect them. Like, oh, they don't have to deal. It's not in their room, but it's like, this is your planet. Don't you care that you're killing it? Like, if you ever want to have kids or think about anybody other than yourself, And that's the thing, is that you could have it your way, but you're not really having it your way, because you're killing the greater good. You're killing the bigger plan, and you're not even seeing it.
Yeah.
So they wanted this one thing, but they shot themselves in the foot, because you can't just take and just have it.
You can't kill nature and expect to thrive.
Yeah.
At least not in the long term.
Not in the long term. That's what, unfortunately, people don't always see that. They're very short term. And when it comes to the planet, it's baffling to me, because there's just proof. And, you know, people are baffling for me.
Right.
So, yeah, I was going to say one more thing about love that I saw. I told you there was like acts of love. And you know, when Ashtaka is dying and then San is trying to give him life, he can't even chew. He's so weak. She is like, she's taking food. She's chewing it in her mouth. You think, so at first it looks like she goes and kisses him. And yes. I'm like, oh, she kisses him. Like Sleeping Beauty, like you get woken by a kiss. No, she was literally like a mother bird chewing up his food to give him strength, to care for him. And it was such a beautiful act of love that she was mothering, caring, and giving life and saving this boy. and it wasn't romantic, and it was just such a beautiful act of love and giving, and I really loved that part too.
Yeah, me too. And I loved everything. Yeah. I loved the entire film. There was not a thing. I mean, like I said, it was kind of a bummer to watch the Japanese version, the original version, and then come back to English and have small differences that were annoying at most.
Yeah.
But overall, there's nothing I don't like about this film. Yeah. This film was awesome. Of the three we watched, definitely my favorite, without question.
It's so funny. I couldn't believe you said it's your favorite. It's absolutely my favorite. Hard to watch because it's so there's so much truth in it.
Right.
That, and if you're in touch with that kind of stuff, it could be sad.
Right.
But beautiful, beautiful movie. So beautifully, all the symbolism, talk about layers. It was just wonderful.
The symbolism, the animation, the action, the spirituality built into it, the folklore / mysticism of it. I loved everything. I see why Spirited Away is the medal winner, so to speak, right? It's probably the most polished, the tightest, the maybe the most unique. This is more of a war movie in a way.
Spirited Away applies. It's more palatable for many more people.
And it's more about you than it is about the world,
yes,
right?
Yes. Well, this is the world is tricky.
Right.
Depending on who you are and how sensitive you are. You know, it could be, people could be offended, people could have opinions about it.
Right.
So, you know, it's interesting. It makes sense that it's not the Spirited Away. You know, it's not that one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hands down, my favorite. I absolutely loved it. Thank you for showing it to me.
Me too. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I loved it. And maybe we're going to have to get ourselves a farm and get a couple of Yakuuls.
Yay!
Yeah, some red elk to ride around on, because that dude was red.
Oh, and he never left him.
Never left him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just another thing real quick. So San was like, she let the elk, what's his name again?
Yakuul.
Yakuul. And she takes off his harness and she goes, you're free to roam wherever you want now. And she never, the elk never leaves him.
Yeah, even though she grants, while Ashtaka's incapacitated.
Yes.
While they're waiting for the deer god to show up, she frees Yakuul, but he stays with
Ashtaka. He never leaves his side. He cared for him the entire time. And it was days, I think he said.
Yes, that's what she says when he finally wakes up. Yakuul has never left your side.
Yep.
Yep.
Oh, love, again.
And I think that's a great way to end it.
Yeah.
Was there anything else you wanted to say?
No, I mean, I just loved it.
Me too. I loved it. Can't recommend it enough. Can't recommend all of these movies enough, quite frankly.
I'm better for having seen them.
Yes.
Seriously, thank you.
Me too. And if you're looking for something new and you're looking for something that's not the norm, not traditional, I think any three of these movies we watched are right up your alley. Definitely, like we already said, this one was the toughest to watch just because there was violence. There was visible violence. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the other ones, it was more slapsticky type of stuff.
Yeah.
This was actual
lighthearted,
death,
you know,
and bombs and people getting blown up and gunpowder and swords and all that stuff.
So heads up.
Yeah. Maybe not the best one for the kids.
Yeah.
The other two, I would say sure.
Yeah, definitely.
But of all of the three, this was my favorite.
Ditto, ditto, ditto.
Well, I want to just say thank you again, Samantha Jane Tilton, for hanging out in the Warp Zone.
Warp Zone!
And we will be back next week, Tuesday, Thursday, to our traditional -1/-2 format. So thank you guys so much for listening this week. We hope you enjoyed it, and we will talk to you guys on Tuesday.
Thanks, guys. You're awesome.
Stay sweet.